Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
Morning, Frank. Good morning, Paul.
In case you guys, good morning, gentlemen.
In case you were wondering,
the
canal is frozen.
I think everything's broken.
You think?
Yeah.
Man, I went to pee this morning and what? what happened?
Yeah, so every Saturday I go up to the cottage to skate on the river, and I guess we're doing it again today, even though it's freezing outside, but whatever.
Wow. Somebody's got some power over you. Here's what we're doing. Okay.
That's what my girlfriend tells me what I got to do. So that's what we're doing. But you know what? But I'll be sitting in the sun on Monday, so I'm okay with that. I'm sitting in Mexico. So
yeah, that's just what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Thanks for the invite.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
Oh, hang on. I'm just checking the news. Mexico is closed. Well, we're open.
Cold front.
We're open for business. Are we starting to climb, Paul?
Well, climb in what way? Sales, listings?
Listings. I want listings.
Well, you know what's funny is we're not climbing. The number is not climbing. We're at 751 active listings. So it's not climbing, but it feels like it's climbing. Like, you know, as a company, we put on quite a few listings recently. The problem is they're selling. We're almost teetering towards a repeat of 2021.
Wow.
You know, we listed a house the other day in the middle of nowhere, $350,000, and we got over $100,000 over the asking price. And it's I'm seeing I never would have thought this. I mean, I had a reporter call me this week from a major paper asking me what my prediction is the market. He said, I've heard you on the show saying 2-4%. I said, I need to change that. That's not where we're going to be. I might even think 10+% wow. Average sale price. Maybe I think our number of sales will be down because, you know, the listings aren't hitting the market like they should be hitting. But it still feels like it's getting busier. Us as a company, we're putting more listings on. I feel like others' listings are hitting the market. Nothing's lasting though, and everyone's holding back offers again. Things are going over asking.
Wow.
So we're gonna have, I don't know if we're gonna have as crazy a Jan, Feb, March, April, but I think we're going to see a small repeat of what we did in 2021.
You see
what are we at now? Listings, Paul?
751.
Wow. 751. Wow. You know, the rentals are still up there, 688. You know, but their homes are selling. It's you know, it's crazy.
What's the time on market now, Paul?
Time on market, or you mean like absorption rate? It's less than 1 month, so it's less than 1 month. Yeah, which means for those who don't know what absorption rate means, which means if no other home hit the market, it would take less than a month for all the homes to sell. So, you know, if you're someone who has 30,000 now buyers, you should have all the absorption done.
So,
but you know, Steve and Frank, we were talking about this before the show started. There was a report from the RBC Economics this week. Canada's fastest growing cities and towns, and number one fastest growing place in all of Canada was
Stittsville.
was Carleton Place. Was Carleton Place number one, and number 10 was Armprior. And every single town or city on that list was a small town or a small city. There was no like, you know, there was no like Ottawa's or you know, major cities like that. It was just all small cities and small towns. So it's and I've always been saying, like, the people are going to the Armpriors and the Carleton Places. They're super popular right now, and it's good to see that there's a shift to the country living. I guess you can't even call Carleton Place country living anymore. Sorry, I got some dogs barking here in the background. So yeah, you can't even call some of these places almost like country towns anymore. Like Carleton Place is a city now. Like, it's crazy. And even Armprior, I mean, it's got everything: restaurants and bars and Costco's, and well, no, it doesn't have Costco, but it's got, you know, just about everything out there as well. So there's a good shift and a good trend going to the outskirts for sure.
I think you're going to see that growth multiply too over the next few years.
I do as well. And then, you know, there's other small towns and cities like that that are booming as well. But it was interesting to see that in the top 10, we have two town/small cities in the top 10.
Wow. What are we looking at for approvals? You getting lots of knocks on your door now, Frank?
Well, I mean, you know, the approvals really haven't changed. What we are going to see is rates start to go up. There's a better than 50% chance now the Bank of Canada may increase prime as early as the 26th, which is this coming week. So on Wednesday, there's a Bank of Canada announcement. The bond markets have priced in the fact that Bank of Canada is expected to raise prime by a quarter point. It's all triggered by the inflation numbers continually being higher than supposed to be. I mean, I think this month the announcement was 4.8%. The goal is to keep it between 2 and 3, so clearly higher. Why is inflation so much? Well, all you have to do is go to the grocery store and you'll figure out real quickly why inflation's so high. You know, there's a shortage, you know, with the truckers now being banned from crossing the border if they're not vaccinated. So now you've eliminated, from what I read, 20% of drivers aren't able to now deliver foods, which means that whatever is left is going to go up in price because it's that more that much more expensive to get it here. So disappointing. Now, a lot of, and I read a lot of articles where politicians are blaming low interest rates for this housing crisis that we're in. And time will tell now. I'm with Paul. I still believe that prices of houses are going to go up because it's not low interest rates that's creating this. It is the fact that there's a lack of housing supply, period. No ifs or buts.
Ottawa starts are down 50% in a year.
Why is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is that? Like, who's slowing down the starts? Is it the builders? Is it the city? Is it the province? Is it the federal government? We don't know. We need to figure out
Gatineau's why down, they're slower. Gatineau's down 91% from year to year. It's crazy.
Which is mind-blowing when you look at the housing crisis we're in. You would think the builders would be ramping up and building more houses than ever because the demand is there. And yet, for some reason, it's down. Now, I know that COVID may have a little bit of an impact on it, but there's still people working the whole summer. Houses are being built. Yes, they're being delayed and things are taking longer, but houses are still being built. And it's, you know, you got to scratch your head and ask yourself, why is it that we're in this crisis? And again, my own personal opinion, I think that, you know, we're not in a health crisis from a standpoint of many countries are dealing with this Omicron. The difference with us is that we just have a poor health system. Our health system is not up to par. And that's the problem that we're having. And it's no different on the housing side. On the housing side, the issue is that we don't have enough supply. And it's been brewing for a while. Nobody's done anything about it. And then once COVID hit and everybody's working from home, it became that much more prevalent, the fact that we had a housing issue, not only in our city, but across the country. And many countries are faced with the same thing.
Yeah, I hate to agree with Frank again, but I have to agree.
You know, it's common.
It's just kidding.
I got to tell you, you guys are getting really boring.
But you know what? I agree with Frank. I mean, I see those politicians on Facebook too, Frank, that are blaming on interest rates. And it's not. It's we have a housing crisis. And unless we fix that, and we talk about the new home builders, we talk about it almost every week. They have to have some of their it's just so hard to get a shovel in the ground right now. They have to do something about that. I'm not sure what level of government needs to do that, but it has to happen because new home builders right now are building so slow. Now, is it because they can't get the product? They can't get the labor? I don't know what it is, but it's just, you know, money. I don't know what it is, but it's just they're building so slow. And, you know, we used to see the track builders build, you know, 30, 40, 50 homes at once in a phase. And now they're building 7 to 10 max in a phase. So unless we start getting some shovels in the ground, we're in a housing crisis.
There's a financial reason for that, right, Paul? I mean, the financial reason now is before they used to open up 50 of them, they would price them and that's it.
Yeah.
Now what they're doing is they're opening up 7 to 10 with one price. And then once it sells out, they know the demand's there. They can open the next phase and bump it by 10 or 15 or 20,000. And they still have the demand. So why wouldn't they? I mean, you know, if the demand is there, why wouldn't they price them that way?
You're absolutely right. I mean, the builders understand that, you know, once they build that phase, if they build, you know, 7 to 10 homes, they know the prices are going up on that next phase. So why would they want to build 40 or 50 homes at the same price when they can build 7 to 10 and then jack up the price for the next 7 to 10? And is it a product of not having the supplies or the labor, or is it the fact that they understand the economics of making more money if they build slower.
Yeah. All right. Just before the break, let's go to the phone. Patrick's been waiting a while. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, guys.
Morning.
So I have a question because we bought a townhouse in the threes in 2018 with a builder that I won't be naming to close in 2021. And just before COVID hit in 2020, we noticed that there was no progress with the townhouse. So we decided to buy a single with another builder, and that closed in early 2021. The original townhouse still doesn't even have a foundation today yet, and I assume it will close sometime in 2023 or 2024. We are thinking of selling our current single when the townhouse will be ready, move into it, buy another single, live in the townhouse for a year, appraise it on the exit, I'm assuming in the sevens, and rent it out and move into the new single. My question is, if the appreciation value from the threes, from the threes to the sevens become tax-free by taking advantage of the principal residence exemption by changing its use from the owner to rental 1 year later?
Well, that's the rule of thumb. As long as you live in the property for a year and it's owner occupied, and then you convert it to an investment property, it's the value, it's deemed the value of the property once you convert it to an investment property. Now, what you need to do specifically is get an appraisal on the property the minute that you move out and you convert it to an investment property. So as long as you have that paperwork in place, then that's when the capital gain should start, taking place at that point.
Okay. So as long as
I would recommend, talk to a tax accountant. Listen, if you call CRA, I'm almost certain you're going to get two or three or four different answers. What I would do is, if you've got an accountant that does this stuff for you, and if you don't, then I would recommend that maybe you hire one just to get that person's advice to make sure that you're covered that way.
Yeah, that's what we're running into. It's different answers by different people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good. Yeah. From the market has appreciated a lot from 2018 all the way till when we're going to exit out in a couple years from there.
You're right, but the rules are in place right now. If it's an owner-occupied property, it is not subject to capital gains. So, if you've been in your single home and you live in it, and then once the townhouse is ready, you sell your single home tax-free. You've lived in it. You move into the townhome, and once you, as long as you live in it, then once you convert it to an investment property, just make sure you get the appraisal, and then it should be tax-free right up until the investment portion kicks in.
The easy way to find out is to ask for an audit.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Patrick. 521-TALK, 521-8255. Hey, we're joined by a special guest next.
Oh, hot tub light.
We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the moment we wait for week upon week, a special visit from our own Mike Hapke, who is... Have you signed Paul yet?
Oh, Jesus.
No.
That didn't take very long. Hold on, Mike.
I'm going to make a deposit in his name. So,
Mike, I have a question.
Get him in the door.
Mike, I got a question for you. A trade-off for me investing in your MIC would be a week down in Florida in one of your houses. How does that sound?
How much you invest?
Wow.
Craig was telling me what you rent them out for, so I thought I'd ask.
I didn't know crickets were out in January. I could hear them.
it would have to be significant. Yeah. And significant investment. No. The real estate market down in Florida is different parts. I mean, you can find certainly areas that are a little more affordable, but one area that we tend to stick to is called Anna Maria Island, and the rental prices have doubled over the past year, so it's been significant.
Is that mainly because people are looking for a safe place to be with their family?
I don't know. Like, typically it's multifamily, or parents and kids and grandkids, et cetera. So it seems to be a gathering place for families. It's not a party place, but it's more family gatherings, but definitely more affluent clientele that can afford, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a week is kind of what these properties are going for here. So it's some people don't want to go to a resort now, right?
Yeah,
I mean, with COVID and everything else, they'd rather just, stick with their family, and it's quite safe. It's a very safe area. And so people are looking for options to get away just with their family.
Now, can multifamilies invest in the MIC too?
That's a good question. Yeah, absolutely. You know, like anybody could partner up and make an investment in joint names, and that's always an option. We can invest in corporate names, which we've been doing a lot of, which has been great. But, you know, now's really the time, you know, and the reason why I called today is because we're starting to see that volatility, you know, climb back into the market. And now's the time when people are looking at it, at their portfolio, and perhaps saying, you know, is this where I want to be? You know, can I really stomach? It's easy to stomach, you know, when the stock market's going up and you're seeing day after day, week after week, month after month, positive gains. But now when you start seeing that volatility, now is when people really start thinking about, you know, how do I diversify? You know, do I take a little bit off the table? Do I go into something a little more secure? And we're talking obviously here with the MIC. We're talking about investing in mortgages in Ottawa real estate, primarily Ottawa. And, you know, it's been consistent year after year, you know, over 7%, 7.26 this past year, our last fiscal. And that's a compounded annualized rate of return. And that's what our investors have been accustomed to over the past 8 years.
Yeah, you've never been below 7%, have you, Mike?
We have not. And you know what I anticipate going into this year? Of course, you know, past returns are no indication of the future, but we certainly can, you know, kind of look ahead and based on what we're seeing, I think we're going to be north of 7 and possibly even north of 7.5 this year. So, you know, it's going to be another great year in our space, you know, where our investors will have a nice, comfortable rate of return, which they don't really have to think about. You know, it's just consistent and steady, and that's what we, you know, pride ourselves on doing is just being consistent.
Oh, Paul wanted me to ask if you fly all of your clients to Florida for meetings.
I have a question. Mikey, I have a question for you. So you say with the MIC, you get a 5% return monthly, and then at the end, once you find out how much you've actually made, then that something happens at the end. Is that 5% you're getting monthly? Yeah, is that 5% you're getting monthly if you invest in a corporation? Is that considered income that you're – it is?
Yeah, it is considered income still. You know, so at year end, you would get your tax slips for the income that you've generated. But, yeah, so what a lot of people do, obviously, it's corporate income, you know, if it's in a business name. But yeah, the 5%, the reason why we pay out 5% is because a lot of our rate of return is also generated based on the fees that we generate throughout the year. So it's not just the interest rate on the mortgages. So what happens is over the year, we start to build up more and more of a reserve based on the fees that we've been collecting. And then at year end, when we do our final audit, and the accountants come in to do the final review and full audit of everything, that's when we post the top-up amount. Because we distribute 100% of our revenues annually, and that is a requirement for a mortgage investment corp. But we don't always know exactly kind of what that return is going to be, you know, until the end of the year, because we keep, you know, obviously doing more and more deals based on as the year, you know, kind of passes through, we generate more fees, we generate a higher rate of return. So we know that comfortably it's 5%. So we do that distribution each month, and then we do our top up at year end. And that's what gets us to the, you know, 7%+ compounded rate of return to our investors. So, but yes, it is considered interest income. Although it's called a dividend, it's important to note that it is interest income, which is why sometimes it's a great investment for a corporation. It's a great investment for a tax-free savings account, of course, registered plans, RESPs, tax RIFs, RESPs, et cetera, are all, you know, a good investment. And, of course, we do cash investments as well. And keeping in mind as well, if you're using, it's an important piece as well, if you're using funds, let's say, from a line of credit, if you're borrowing to invest, that money that you borrow is also tax deductible on the other side because you're investing in a Canadian company. So that's very important to note as well. But lots of options, and it's been extremely busy. We're still raising anywhere between $1 million and $1.5 million a month. But what I've seen lately is a increase in terms of the amount of calls that we're getting and the interest that we're getting simply because of the volatility in the market. When everything's going up, you know, people are just, yeah, I'll just go for the ride and I'm happy with my rate of return in my, you know, stock portfolio. But as soon as you start to see a little bit of, you know, a few waves starting to happen in the market, the phones start to ring a lot more, which is why I thought I'd, you know, call in today.
Boy, it sure is nice, though, to have something in your portfolio that's been steady and over the past, I don't know, how many years now, Mike?
8 years. Yeah, it is. And, you know, as I'd mentioned before, I mean, obviously I'm an investor, Frank's an investor, our corporations are investors. And it's something, you know, I'm quite, you know, pleased to have access to be able to invest and not have to worry about, you know, do I have to move this or change that or should I stay in the market or should I not? I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
It is really, as I said it and forget it, for me anyways. You know, each individual is different, but, you know, obviously, you know, we know exactly, you know, where we invest, types of mortgages we invest. We've never had a loss of principal or fees or income since inception. You know, we've never had a power of sale in the portfolio. We rarely have an NSF. We might get, you know, a handful and a half a year. It's just sleepy. It's a sleepy investment.
But you vet the people that you,
for Ottawa, right?
you vet the people that you loan to pretty closely, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Every single mortgage that we write, has a full underwriting process, full appraisal. We use multiple tools to determine value and there has to be the ability to pay. You know, we just don't lend to anybody that wants funds on their property. They have to have the ability to pay and they have to have a track record of paying on time. You know, there are a lot of different mortgage investments out there that will, you know, do financing for bruised credit or past, you know, poor past performance on repayment. But that's not us. We'd like to keep it very, very clean and very consistent because that's what our investors want. They don't want headaches. They don't want to hear about, you know, collections that we're having to go through and power of sales. And they're not, you know, they can't stomach that. And I don't want that either for myself personally.
Yeah, nobody wants
you know,
that.
Where
yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
it. I'd rather take a slightly lower rate of return, you know, you know, at 7, 7.5, you know, than maybe 9.5 or 10 with lots of volatility.
Yeah.
It's just not where I am right now. I like to, you know, not have to worry about it, right? So,
easiest way to get more information, Mike?
613-274-0055 is the number, or advancedmic.com, advancedmic.com. Check us out.
Wonderful. Well, look, I can see we're on a Zoom over here, Mike, and I can see Paul going to the website right now.
Oh, why is it always Paul? Why is it always Paul?
Thank you, Mike.
It's the low-hanging fruit, Paul. It's the low-hanging fruit. love you guys.
All right, thanks, Mike.
See you, Mike.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the phones we go and to the beautiful Glebe. Say hello to Stan. Hi, Stan.
Hey, how are you doing?
We couldn't be better.
Can I ask your name? Because I know everybody else except your name.
Oh, I'm Steve. That's right. Steve. I never give my name because I'm a little ashamed to be with these
guys. No. It's always Paul and
Frank.
Yeah. Okay. My question. I've got RSP about 7,000, okay? I know that's peanuts. I know that. But should I be thinking about investing with your friend that was on earlier?
Well, minimum, I think Mike said the minimum is 10,000. Said, I mean, you know, it all depends on your portfolio. I mean, Mike will tell you that they have to do an analysis of what you have and, you know, you have to be accepted as an investor kind of thing. So, you know, the best thing is to call the number that Mike gave, 274-0055, and either Mike or Jen will give you the information that's needed.
I have a second question. In the Glebe, there is a property, and it's not my property, okay? So I can't talk for the owner. But they had about 3 or 4 real estate agents, and you tell on the show, you always say that the properties are going like over and above, and this property is not selling at all. In the green.
How long has it been sitting there?
Oh, about a month, at least a month now.
At least a month. Well, that's not too bad.
Well, anybody
that comes down here and says it's a tear down, you got to tear
it down. What's the price that?
Up.
What's the price that?
$830,000.
Yeah, so two things are selling a house: condition and price. So we have a problem with one of them, if not both of them. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to comment on someone else's listing. So it's not
we do have a problem with the condition, okay?
Well, of course, the condition. But listen, there's lots of people that are looking for ugly homes, myself included. I'm looking for an ugly home to start or to renovate.
But this property has like about 10 bedrooms. Can you believe it? And right now it's a rooming house, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it might have issues, eh, Paul?
Yeah, so trying to get insurance, even probably trying to get financing on a rooming house is very, very hard, correct, Frank? So I'd like...
Correct.
Yeah,
it's it's right in the... okay, you know Main Street and Riverdale? Yes, right there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
This isn't your property.
Close to Ottawa U.
This isn't right your property. It's not your property you're trying to sell, is it, Stan?
No. I'm asking for a friend. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. So Paul's right.
It's an investment property, right, Paul? I mean, no question. I mean, you're close to Ottawa U. You've got a rooming house. It sounds like the shape isn't great.
Carleton University, you're close to everything, okay?
Yeah.
And at one time, it was filled with students, you know?
Yeah. So it's,
every property is unique, right, Paul? Every property.
Yeah, it's unique. It's... you know, it's not for everybody. And like I said, trying to get insurance and financing on a rooming house is really, really, really tough. And a lot of people are, I mean, you could take it. It doesn't have to be a rooming house. I mean, you could, you know, live in it and kick the tenants out as long as the leases are you know, on month to month. But
it's different. Right? For everybody.
There's various reasons why homes don't sell. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's condition and price. And if you're wrong on both of those or one of those, then, you know, if it was priced properly, it doesn't matter about the condition, truthfully. So it's obviously a little bit high in price. But once again, now that I kind of know the location, I would hate to talk about someone else's listing. So I'm just going to stop talking about the listing.
All right. Got a question in that was sent to us from Paul, not our Paul. How to check to see if there's a lien on a house.
How to check?
Great question.
Yeah. How do you know? How do you know if there's a lien on the house? But if you're looking
at
it. But is there a way
you go to the registry office, Steve?
I'm just wondering if there's a way to check sooner because you don't want it on closing, right? To find out there's a lien.
Well, a lawyer will do that. Lawyer's supposed to do a lien check days before the closing to make sure that it's lien free, or if there's a lien on it, it's going to be paid by obviously by the vendor. But you know, at the end of the day, if you're just inquiring and specifically about your own property, number one, when you bought the property, your lawyer would have given you the house lien free with the exception of a mortgage you got. That would be the only lien. So the lawyer would have done that on your behalf when you purchased a home. If you've been in the home for many years and are just curious why if somebody else would put a lien. Now, liens are put on, and Paul sees it probably as well as I do. You know, and I think they've been outlawed now, but furnace companies used to go door to door and sell you these furnaces for a certain monthly amount, and in very, very, very tiny print, they put that they were registering a lien on your house. Customers didn't even know that this lien was on there. And it becomes problematic when you go to refinance your house because that lien needs to be paid off. And most customers say, no, I'm paying monthly. I'm fine with it. Yeah, but at the end of the day, what happens with a mortgage is if you pay off the first mortgage and there's a second mortgage on there, and a lien is considered a second mortgage. If you pay off that first mortgage, if you just renew it, you're fine. But if you pay it off and go somewhere else, the order changes. So the lien would be in a first position and the mortgage would be in a second position, which no bank will be okay with. So one of two things has to happen. You either have to ask for the lien company to postpone to stay in a second position, or you have to pay it off. But, you know, there are construction companies that put liens on if something happens where you have a dispute with them. So if you're looking for that, I would say go to the registry office, and at the registry office, you can find out, you can get a copy of whether there's any liens. on your property, and that's probably the easiest way to do it, or get your lawyer to do it, but probably a little more expensive if your lawyer does it. You might be better off just go to the registry office, probably be less than $100 to check on it, if anything.
And what about liens on investment properties? If your tenant does something to the property, can they put a lien on it?
Well, I don't know. You're supposed to be notified. Anybody that puts a lien on, you can't just put a lien on and not notify the owner of the home. So, if somebody puts a lien on your property, there would, an investment property, I mean, somebody would have to notify you that they put a lien on your property. So, tenants can't do anything to put a lien on a property, I don't think, without registered. And I think it has to be a registered letter to the owner of the property.
I think the question was if a tenant makes a change to the property, and doesn't.
What kind of change?
Well, a physical change to the property, say inside, and doesn't pay for it. And now can a lien be put on the property, on the owner's property, if the tenant is not?
Well, I think the issue would become with the company to put the lien on. It's like you dealt with somebody that didn't own the property. So take that lien off because I'm the owner of the property. I didn't authorize you to do anything to my house.
Yeah.
You come to the owner. You don't do it with a tenant. If the tenant did it, then you got an issue with the tenant. You take the tenant to small claims court, not me, the owner. So, yeah.
And then you've actually broken your contract, right? In my rental contracts and in most rental contracts, you can't make any changes to the house without the owner's permission, including painting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have that in my contract that you can't make any changes unless you notify me. I go as far as to say only little nails for hanging pictures, nothing too severe. You have to have conditions like that in there because otherwise your tenants could do some crazy things to your house. But that's why it's so important to find the right tenant. So important.
I will tell you where you have to be careful with liens is when you're getting divorced and selling a property. Then you could find out there's a lien from the other half that you had no idea was there.
Are you talking personally?
No, I like to do my research for the show.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, wasn't there a time when you had a rental and there was a pole installed in the bedroom? Wasn't that yours?
No, that was his own house.
That's my house.
Hey, listen, some of the rental rates across Canada came out. The rent's getting pretty crazy, eh? Remember that guy that used to say the rent is too damn high? You know what it is in Vancouver now? They lead the country. For one bedroom apartment, $21.76 a month in Vancouver.
Wow.
Ottawa,
wow.
We come in ninth in Ottawa at $16.18. That's a one bedroom.
$16.18.
Which is still high.
That's still high.
Yeah.
Condos, right? That's most condos, right? I mean, most condos are one bedrooms.
Yeah, I know, but that's
yeah, we're seeing the rents potentially are going to get a little bit stagnant because there's so many rentals on the market right now. I mean, when I mentioned earlier, there's 688 homes for rent, almost as much as there are for sale in the city of Ottawa. So we might see some rental rates coming down a little bit, maybe not coming down, but just being a little bit stagnant, which is what we're starting to see. But, you're still talking a suburbia townhome anywhere between 2000 and 2300, depending on the size, 2400 sometimes, depending on the size, which is a lot. That's a lot considering I used to get $1,500 for my townhomes, and I thought that was a home run. So the rental rates are definitely really high, as you just said, Steve. But I couldn't imagine what they are in Vancouver for like a townhome in Vancouver is probably about $3,000 or $4,000 a month.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, obviously, no surprise, Toronto is second, followed by Etobicoke, Mississauga, North York. So we come in at number nine.
So basically, when you're talking about all those places, that's Toronto.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on the dollar outskirts of Toronto.
Yes, yeah, with the exception of Vancouver. Gatineau, by the way, 1,415, if you're curious.
For a one-bedroom.
Yep.
That's still pretty high, considering Gatineau generally wasn't considered one of the, was considered a deal, bargain to go rent in Gatineau.
But I'm wondering if a lot of these rental properties are going to end up being listed now, because there's so many rental properties. There's got to be a point where you just go, you know what, I'm just going to sell it.
Well, Steve, it's funny you say that because a lot of people have made so much money on their rental properties that if they can't find a tenant, they're like, you know what? I've made $200,000 in the last 4 years. Let's just get rid of it. Like take that money and do something else. Right. So we are seeing a little bit of that. We are seeing some investment properties starting to hit the market. And I think we're probably going to see more as the rental market, starts to be tough again. With that many rent, I don't think I've ever seen this many rentals on the market in eons.
And it's been steady, right? You're talking about six or more months now where there's been a lot of rentals.
Yeah, there has been. There has been. I mean, just in Barrhaven and Kanata alone, there's almost 150 homes for rent just in Barrhaven and Kanata. So wow. It's pretty crazy right now.
521-TALK, 521-8255. Back with our final segment after this.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. I'm Steve Gregory. That's for...
I can't believe somebody asked what your name is. Every second commercial has got your voice on there. So.
Yeah, my voice, but not my name. All right, so listen, it looks like maybe Wednesday Prime's going to go up. What's Prime at right now, Frank?
Prime for the banks is at 2.45%. So expected, again, keep in mind, they've gone down 1.5% since COVID started. So, and it was deemed back in March of 2020 that we were running at peak. We were running smoothly. Economy was humming. Unemployment was down. That was considered, you know, the top of the prime rate. So, you know, there's 1.5% their spread right now that it's come down, and it came down within 60 days at 1.5%. It's not going to go up in 60 days. It's going to be a gradual increase. Again, they're all over the map, and like they always are, economists are all over the map. You've got some economists now that are predicting 6 increases this year to get us back to where we were just that quickly. I doubt it. I have a hard time believing that that's going to happen. I think that that would create shockwaves in our economy, and therefore we might go right into a recession. I think the Bank of Canada needs to be very careful in the way they do it. You know, I think 0.25% increase, if they did it this Wednesday, then, don't expect anything until later on in the spring sometime for that next one. Now, inflation numbers need to come into check. But the fact that everything is shut down, once we see the numbers for February and March, you would think employment numbers are going to be weak. Now, who knows? But, if we saw that more jobs got created, then you know there's something fishy with the numbers, because there's no question that people are out of work right now with everything being shut down in the service industry specifically. But, you know, we were talking on the break about hockey games. Well, you know, it's not just the fact that fans aren't going to the hockey games. It's lots of people that rely on that income that no longer have jobs now for the next 4, 5, 6 weeks, the workers that work there. And for some of them, it's their extra income. It's their, they have full-time jobs, and this is their part-time job that they get extra income. Well, they're losing that income. So those are job losses, which they may not count. But, you know, expect interest rates to go up. Like I said, I think on the fixed rate side, you know, the expectation is that fixed rates will go up 0.5% in 2022 from where they are today. And on the prime side, I think that we're going to see anywhere between 2%. So 0.5 to 0.75 point is my guess on what prime will go up this year.
So prime,
you talk about, the service industry, Frank. I wonder what's going to happen to some of these restaurants we have. Not just here, but all around Ontario.
Everywhere.
I wonder what's going to happen to some of these restaurants who are just struggling to get by, going through, what is this, our third shutdown, maybe even our fourth shutdown?
Talk about stress too, right, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
So listen, prime was at its highest in August of 81. What do you think the rate was in August of 81?
Prime would have been what? Probably 15 to 18%.
22.7.
Oh, 22.
Yeah. I was about to say 22.75 before you said that. That's a lie. That's a lie. I was going to say 22.8, so I was wrong, but you know, I was right in the ballpark.
Isn't that an incredible
different times.
Number though?
Yeah, at different times. I mean, if you remember back then, I mean, you know, I remember clients, and I was working at the bank, and I remember clients lining up on the first of the month to update their passbooks because they wanted to see how much interest they got. Because back then, savings accounts had interest rates of 15, 16, 17%. So a lot has changed. And listen, we're not going back to that. And I still get clients once in a while that call me, well, my mom and dad told me that they once paid 18 and they think it might go back to that. That's never going to happen. Not in our lifetimes, I don't believe. I think they've gotten inflation under control now. That being said, I mean, what's out of their control is what's happening now, which is a supply issue. And once they get that under, get it taken care of, then I think we'll start to see the inflation come back between that 2 and 3% mark, which
but
is what they want
everything
to maintain
it at. Everything is in short supply right now. New homes in short supply, yeah, resales everything. In short supply, store shelves in short supply.
Like, I went to Shoppers yesterday to get some shaving cream for my trip. There was 2 cans of shaving cream. Wow. That's it. 2. Yeah, like everything's in short supply. You go to the grocery store, there's nothing there. Well, not nothing, but there's, you know, it's very limited. You go to, you know, like I said, I went to Shoppers and it was very limited there. Everything's in short supply. And because of that, what happens when you have short supply?
Price goes up.
The demand's still there, so the price goes up. And that's what we're seeing in the housing market. That's what we're seeing in stores. That's what we're seeing everywhere. And our last conversation about these, you know, 18% mortgages and that, I'd like to contribute to that, but I'm a little bit younger than you guys, so I don't know those things.
I only know by research I've done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were about 40 years old at that time,
Steve.
I was a baby.
1981, how old were you, Paul?
I was seven.
And you didn't have your first house by then?
No, I had my first house when I was 20, I believe.
Yeah.
20, I had my first house.
Not happening anymore. Not many 20-year-olds able to buy a home these days. I mean, that, you know, that number's gone up too, obviously. You know, now expect first-time home buyers to be in that, at best-case scenario, 25, 26. But realistically, most first-time home buyers will be in their late 20s, early 30s now.
And and not many with single income, eh?
Very difficult. I mean, you're talking, again, I mean, the rule of thumb is still 5 times your income. So, you know, if your average, even a condo now is 400, 450, you know, if you have 5% down, you're still required to make in the neighborhood of between 80 to 100,000 to qualify. So not many 25, 26-year-olds making that kind of income when they get out of school.
I saw an interesting report this week. Don't quote me on the number because I might be off a tiny bit, but interesting report that showed what percentage are first-time home buyers, what percentage are actually investors, what percentage are, you know, move-up buyers. And you know the number for investors, like with multiple units? I think it was something like 30% of all properties are investors.
Wow.
And that's across.
Rich get richer, and that trend's expected to continue, and only because if they make it tougher and tougher to get mortgages, then it really weeds out the first-time home buyers. It weeds out the younger Canadians and opens the door, which is not what they're intended to do, but it opens the door for those that have a lot of equity built where they can pull that equity out and be able to buy other properties.
Just before we end this, no change on regulation, futures, what they're going to do with the rate? Listen,
there's some coming. I just don't know when. I mean, I think they're using, you know, obviously this Omicron and the shutdown is stopping them from going out there, and because it's going to be interesting to see what their budget entails once they do come out with it. I know the opposition's pushing hard as to where all this money's going, but, you know, at the end of the day, there are going to be some changes happening when it comes to qualifying for a mortgage and housing in general. I believe it's going to be in March sometime. I think the budget will be sometime in March.
Will those changes make it easier or more difficult to qualify?
I think some will open up the doors for young Canadians to be able to get in, but they obviously, I think some of them might also hinder people from buying homes because they might make qualifying a little bit tougher.
Birthdays.
I got a couple. One, Jeanette Oliver, who's been with Lisa's team, I think, since we opened back 17 years ago. So happy birthday to Jeanette, who's about to become a grandma too. And, you know, both Paul and I are a good friend that celebrated his birthday yesterday, a mortgage broker with the wrong company. But anyway, Adam Cote celebrated his birthday yesterday too. So happy birthday to Adam. Good guy.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Adam. It was his, 50th or?
37th. Yeah. Don't even go there. He's a young puppy.
Also, I want to wish Tim Finley from my company, who's Dora's partner. He's been with the company 6 years today. So happy anniversary, Tim.
In a row?
In a row.
Hey, Steve, can you imagine my announcements if I started adding how many, you know, out of my 100 agents who's been here how many years? We need a whole segment for that.
How many would have vowels?
Oh, yeah. Not as many. Not as many as the birthdays.
Frank N. at MortgageBrokersOttawa.com. Paul at PaulRushforth.com. Have a great week, gentlemen.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Please continue to support local businesses and charities.